Okay.
All right. Welcome back to this week's edition of the Rock and Roll Ghost Podcast. This week we have actor James Badge Dale. His most recent role is on 1923 on Paramount Plus, the Taylor Sheridan created show with Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren. James Badge. Everybody calls you Badge, right?
Yeah, most people call me Badge.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. All three of us are here. Sometimes I do wake up in the morning and I'm like, wait, sorry, that's my kid's grandma's phone over here. Hold on a second.
No problem. Now take your time.
We got a lot going on. Hey, Amy, I got your phone for you. Yeah.
All right. Take two, man. Let's start this.
No, you're good. We're gonna keep it going.
Yeah. By the way, I got a sleeping 14-month-old in one room. I got my girlfriend and her mom in the other room, but they're gonna be leaving in a little while. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and we could just keep talking.
Yeah. No, we're good. We're good. So, let's talk about 1923. I didn't even recognize you when I started watching the show, and I didn't see your. Like, because I didn't notice your name, and you weren't in the lead credits. And I'm gonna forewarn people: we're just gonna jump into spoilers. Spoiler. So if you haven't watched the series, has officially ended. I mean, the season officially ended. So beware. But I was very shocked on episode three when you got killed.
Yeah.
So I since read that you knew you were only going to do the three episodes, right?
Yeah, I did. They were really straight up and honest with me. I think, Taylor always had this kind of idea of this character. And, I think they made a few pitches to some other actors. And I think people just said, they didn't want to die that early. I get it. I understand. It's hard to die. I don't enjoy doing it necessarily, but it's part of life and we all do it. And, I got to hang out with all these guys for 2 months. I got to be out in the, on the mountain up top up there. We were shooting in Montana, and, I had a great lifetime experience working with two legends of the game. And, it's also great material too. Sheridan's writing is very strong. It's on point, and it's fun to do.
Yeah. What was the most fun you actually had on set? Just riding around and getting into shootouts.
Yeah, just riding around, getting into shootouts, man. That's what we do. I'm a kid from New York City. I still live in New York City. It's a different world. And one of the gifts of acting, one of the gifts of filmmaking, is that you get to go to these different places and tell these different stories and immerse yourself in these environments. And I think people have this idea of Hollywood being this, literally a Hollywood thing. It's actually not. It's kind of like working for the carnival. And, I showed up to Montana and I knew most of the crew guys. I'm seeing actors I know. I'm seeing stunt guys I've worked with 10 years ago. You know what I mean? I'm working with people. It's a very small community, and we all come from different walks of life, and we all are passionate about the stories we tell. So, it really is this kind of life experience, and I'm really proud of the show because it works. The show, like what we filmed, I thought it was beautiful, and still is beautiful because the show's still going. I think the finale was just this past weekend.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I've only finished episode three, so I'm not.
Oh, you did. Oh, you just stop right there. You're all right, man. No, I'm kidding. Walk through, and now I think they're doing a second season. There's a lot of material. You guys are taking off. Bye. I love you, and I love you. All right.
What was I gonna say? I have no idea. I saw that you were you mentioned that you were working with some of the people that you worked with on The Lone Ranger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's, you know, that's the way, like you said, you know, you kind of just bump into people along the way different times in your career, right?
It's like I said, it's a small community, you know, and it's filled with really good people who work hard and work long hours, and we try to do it in the safe way, you know. Yeah, it was wild for me. There's a particular stunt guy named Happy, who I think he was like 20, 21 years old when we were doing Lone Ranger. And I'll never forget this, man, because he did some stunt riding for me. You know, I can't ride. I mean, they can make it look like I can ride, but let's be really honest with you. Like, you have to grow up on a horse to be able to do these things that these guys are doing, you know? Yeah. And I can pull it off to an extent, but there's going to be moments where you gotta put your ego aside, and that director's going to come up to you and say, hey, we're going to do it with this guy now. We're going to do it with the real guy now. And it was a train transfer. And so Gore Verbinski says, I want you to watch this. And we got these trains, these working trains. This train's going about 30 miles an hour. Gore wants it to go 35. He's like going faster. And the scene is my character's riding up next to the train, and he's going to jump on the saddle, ride on top of the saddle, and then jump from the saddle onto a moving train.
Yeah.
And so Happy, he's an expert at just riding in the saddle. So what he was having Happy do was ride next to the train and just ride and stand up on the saddle and just ride at full speed. He goes, no, I don't want a harness. The harness is going to distract me. And I watched him do this a number of times. And then they pulled the train over, and Gore Verbinski made me get on a ladder. and he said, I'm sorry to do this to you. We're gonna do a close up of your face riding a ladder, and then we'll put your face on top of Happy.
Yeah.
And I love Gore.
Yeah.
And so I said, yes. I he's like, you want to put some reins on that ladder? I said, yeah, let's put some reins on this ladder. And the whole crew who you know, they know me, and they're good to me, and they're kind. They turn their backs so that I wouldn't have to see their face as they laugh.
The guy on the ladder pretending he's jumping on something.
You know, and so it's just me and Gore, and Gore got in my face, and he's like, ah, and he's like, ah. And so we just mimic each other, and I love Gore. And so we were going back and forth, and the camera was right here. But what they didn't do was they didn't remove the extras from the train car. So as we're filming this, I kind of look to my left, and there's an extra, this lady, and she's in full, like, you know, 1840s gear. And she just looks at me, and she just shakes her head in disappointment. Just shook her head in disappointment right in the middle of the take. And I'll never forget that. And, you know, I show up to Montana for 1923, and who's there riding horses? Happy and his brother.
Yeah.
And Happy's a grown-ass man now with a beautiful daughter and a wonderful family. And I got to ride horses with that guy for 2 months also.
Yeah.
You're
good.
Let me not turn that off. You know,
You know, people, you know, you kind of realize how dangerous this stuff is, because every now and again you hear about somebody that, you know, a stunt person that died. It's like, well, nobody should have to die for a movie, you know?
No, nobody should. You know, it's dangerous work. And I think, you know, we've been doing it for a long time, and these guys have been doing it for a long time, and they're professionals. And, you know, all these stunt guys would give an arm and a leg. They love their job and they love what they do. And we try to do it in the most, how do you say this? You want to push it right to that line where it looks beautiful, but you want to do it safely, because no one deserves to get hurt. It's at the end of the day, it's a movie. We're making movies.
Right.
But I have a lot of respect and a lot of love for all these guys.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that we're talking about stunt guys and you're on 1923, because the first time as a human being I ever knew anything about stunts was because of Harrison in Raiders of the Lost Ark. The movie was such a success that they had all these, one of the first truly behind the scenes looks at the film, like on PBS or something at the time. And it's like, because it was a phenomenon, and they showed his stunt guy being the guy underneath the Nazi's car or whatever, or the truck. you know, in the truck scene. Yeah. And, you know, they show Harrison doing a lot of it, of course, because he was a very he's always been a very physical guy, but there were some things that you're not going to throw Harrison Ford on the ground and have him pulled by a truck.
No, you're not. But that being said, I think he would try to do it anyway. Harrison, I was blown away. He's 80 years old. He never wanted to get out of the saddle of the horse. You know, he was on set the whole time. He loves making movies, you know, and he was really, kind to me and big brothery with me. Is that a word? Big brothery, you know, he treated me like a little brother. And he took me aside and he taught me a few things. And, you know, we all need that. We all need that in our lives. You know, it reinvigorated me to continue working, continue acting.
Yeah. Is one of the reasons you took the job to work with Harrison?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you get to a place in your career, you want to work with good people. I want to work with good actors. I want to work with good filmmakers. And you know, you want to go work on good writing. And this checked all those boxes, you know? Yeah, man. I was like, let me come to work, and I'm your guy. Like, thank you. I you know, it's a funny thing in Hollywood, like, you know, because everyone's like, oh, it's my job. There's always a list. There's always other people. And it was something, and I can't even tell you if he actually said this, because it's funny how like rumors start. But I always heard this story of Benicio del Toro when he was younger, and, you know, they'd offer roles to other people and then it would get to him. And he would talk about how once it's mine, it's mine.
Yeah.
I own it. And you start to, you know, you take ownership of it and you run with it. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing when it's yours. Sometimes it's not yours though.
Yeah. No, I get you. You've done I was looking over, you know, I've seen you in a bunch of stuff. The first time I saw you in something, I didn't even remember because it was like your first film, Lord of the Flies. I saw that in the theater, you and Baltasar Getty in that film. I saw that in the theater, like I said, but that was 33, you know, years ago. What was that experience like? It was your first real gig, right?
Yeah, that was my first real job. I feel like I've been trying to recreate it ever since. I was 10 years old and they took a bunch of kids and none of us were actors. And, you know, they had an open audition at the elementary school, at my elementary school. And my parents were very against children working in this industry. And, you know, my father said to my mom, let's let him audition and he'll learn about rejection.
Yeah.
This is the lesson we're going to teach our 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And it went in the other direction. I didn't know what to do with himself. I had such an amazing time. I mean, that was, it was 25 kids in Jamaica with no parents. We all had to sign off guardianship to one teacher. And we ran around like complete lunatics on this compound. I didn't know when the camera was rolling, when the camera wasn't rolling. It was a really amazing experience. I don't think it could ever happen again. I don't think legally. I don't know. I don't know what insurance company is signing off on this movie. But I quit acting after that.
Yeah.
Because everything after that was work. I was a kid and that was a certain experience. It was such a beautiful sensory, creative, imaginary experience. And I gravitate towards that. And I think on some level, if you look at 1923, that's in that same vein of work. That's in that same vein of like, you know, we're going there. We are going to be there and you are going to get dirty and you are going to be tired and you are going to be cold, but we're going to shoot something special and we're going to shoot something that's poignant and it matters. And the Pacific, we were talking about that. Yeah. That was definitely, it was Lord of the Flies-esque.
Yeah.
I think we all about tore ourselves to pieces spiritually to make that. Yeah. You know, that was 10 months in the jungle and the pressure of trying to tell a story that matters to so many people, a true story where you're filling these men's shoes and you're talking to their family members. It's hard work. and I like the hard work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's the easy work out there. You can go do the easy work, but I think the hard work is it's more gratifying.
Well, what your statement actually makes me think of a question, but the natural follow-up is that you quit after Lord of the Flies, essentially, and you got to grow up and, you know, become an adult on your own without having Hollywood or, you know, work shape you in that regard. Yeah. What made you come back to it?
I was playing hockey in Utah. The only school that recruited me was a school called Manhattanville College, Division III college, just north of New York City. And so I came out to play hockey, and I figured, I'll join the theater program because I figure that's an easy A while I'm playing hockey. And
yeah, you could just say you're already a professional. You made a movie.
It was funny. I was terrible.
Yeah.
And I became obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It was thrilling to me to get on stage. Suddenly I felt so naked and so afraid. And here I'm meeting this wonderful community of people who are trying to help, you know, and everyone's going through this together. And you know, that's what happened. I was 21, 22 years old, and I was a freshman at Manhattanville College, and I fell in love with the theater program. And I got hurt in hockey, by the way. I wasn't really going any further. I was a goaltender, and people were starting to score some goals on me, if you know what I'm saying.
Slip it early.
I was, it was, I had hit my ceiling, but
Better than me. I stopped playing baseball in Little League, so.
Oh, yeah, I got cut from Little League.
How do you get cut from Little League?
I have this vague memory of tryouts for the Little League. I think I got in a fight.
There you go.
I remember my mom saying, good for you. You stood up for yourself. And then I went up to the base and I took a huge swing and I let go of the bat and I hear this oomph. Oh. And I turn around and one of the coaches is laying there on the ground with the bat in his stomach let's get out of here.
Yeah,
okay. Go back to the ice rink, kid.
I can see how that happened now.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you end up accidentally assaulting, you know, the coaches.
That'll do it.
Aluminum bat or wood?
Oh, aluminum.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Make it worse. Mm-hmm. I hated aluminum bats, man, because it just if you didn't hold on to the bat the right way, it would just seem almost felt like you broke one of your fingers because it would hit wrong.
Right, right.
Yeah. I hated aluminum bats. I never understood the point of them.
I hated them both. I hated the wooden bats.
You just weren't cut out for baseball.
I just wasn't cut out for baseball. I like
it. Well, you know, you were in a bunch of stuff that I feel like the first time I really noticed you in something, even though there were things I had seen you in, was The Departed, which is obviously a huge, you know, get for a young guy to be in a Scorsese movie with DiCaprio and Matt Damon and Nicholson. I mean, my God, did you even spend any time with Nicholson? Because I don't think you had any scenes with him.
No, I didn't have any scenes with him, but I had a lot of scenes with Matt Damon, who would always come to work the next day after working with Nicholson and he would do his Nicholson impression of what happened on the day before.
Yeah.
It was a wild experience, man. I was 25, 26 years old, and I'm sitting on this set with all these guys, and I would look around and I'd say, wait, who's the one guy who doesn't belong here? You know, yeah. Me. Yeah. And that was the lesson I had to learn on that movie, was dealing with that voice, you know, because we all have these voices. You know, everybody in every circumstance has a little voice in the shoulder going, you don't belong here. You don't belong here. You know, and we got another one over here that says, maybe you do. But I grew up a lot on that set.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I was nervous and I was scared and I kept to myself and I was just trying to get through, man, because I was just like, somebody's going to realize that they made a mistake.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be out of here. But I learned a lot. Because I learned a lot from these guys who, by the way, and Matt Damon would talk about it, he has that voice on his shoulder and he does it anyway. And that's where I learned about acting in that way of, it's not about not being nervous. It's not, it's about recognizing your feelings. It's about honoring your feelings. It's about saying like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. And I got a voice telling me I shouldn't be here. Roll the cameras. I'm going to do it anyway. You know, it's not the, what is that saying? Bravery is not the absence of fear. It's continuing on. I'm butchering the saying.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah,
like, continuing on despite.
Right. Embracing it and still moving on.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's when something miraculous happens. That's when the camera picks up something that's totally not planned, something that's organic, and it only happens once. And I think that's the beauty of film. And Scorsese would allow that. And that's what Nicholson would do. That's what Damon would do. That's what Leo would do. You'd watch these guys. I mean, Wahlberg would walk in and, I mean, he had wonderful material. And he would just tear up that set. And you'd just be like, wow, what did I just watch?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was brave. You know, it was brave. And I love filmmaking, man. And, like, you got to ride that, like, fine line, that edge right there.
Yeah.
You know? 'Cause it, don't let it be boring.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you do, just don't let it be boring.
Was there anything Scorsese imparted on you that you've kept?
I thought when you get a job, when you're a child, you know, you grow up watching Mean Streets. I grew up watching Goodfellas. I such an iconic director of all these iconic actors and I thought he was going to hand me the key to acting. You know, you think you're going to sit down on set and have some 45-minute discussion about the inner workings of this character. No, he doesn't have time for that.
Yeah.
He hires you because he trusts you. He hires you because he saw something in you. Now it's your turn to go do it. Martin Scorsese's direction will be as simple as faster, slower, take a beat. That was good. Do it again. It's your job to fill up the space,
yeah.
You know, and he's very good at creating that fertile playground for that. And so I that's what I learned from that, was that I'm not here to rely on Marty. Marty's actually hired me and he relies on me. And there's something freeing about that trust.
Yeah.
You know, trust in that and trust in yourself.
Well, how does that work for you when you're, you do something like The Departed, it ends up going on, it wins, you know, Best Picture at the Oscars, and you're dealing with somebody like Scorsese who has that, you know, undefined or unspoken trust in you, but then you move on to something else where a director's kind of like, you know, all nitpicking everything, maybe. I can't say you've had that. You've done enough work that you probably have. How do you manage to go from one project where it's hands off and another where it's hands on too much?
That's an excellent question. I will say this. I'll say that 90% of the directors I've worked with are at the A level are pretty much hands off.
Yeah.
You know, everyone wants to have that conversation, but, you know, there's a lot going on. A director has a lot going on. There's a lot of different things they're worried about. The last thing they want to worry about is actually having to take time out of their day to talk to an actor, you know, who's not sure what they're doing. Yeah. You should be, you know, I do a lot of prep work. I do a lot of preparation to come to work and to let that all go and be empty. And just be at work and be like, hey, man, we can flow any which way. And I'm comfortable with that only because I've done so much work on the other side before I got here. You know what I mean? Yeah, the most directors are pretty hands off and it's fun. I'll try to save the stories with the nitpicking. The nitpicking.
No, but just kind of in general, how do you handle that when somebody is too hands-on, where it's like, okay, now you're intruding on what I'm trying to do, perhaps. How do you deal with that in a, you know, person-on-person way, or just internally? How does that work? Do you get pissed off? Do you get agitated? Do you get thrown off your game at all?
I think part of this is what I've learned over the years is to not take things personally.
Yeah.
You know, I am an actor. I think about myself too much. I can be in my own head with that. So I try to, you know, not take it so personally. I have gotten myself into some moments with directors that I wish I hadn't. I look back and I say, oh man, I defended myself too much. You know, I took too much of I took it personally. One of the coolest things I've ever seen, I worked with this actor, Arliss Howard.
Yeah.
Bit of a legend, you know? I mean, he was in Full Metal Jacket, man. He had a bit of a reputation when we worked together, and he was trying to be a nicer human being. And he would talk about it. He's like, man, I'm just trying to not do what I used to do. It's not acceptable anymore. Yeah. And I watched a director nitpick him. And he looked at me, and I could see the vein start bulging in his neck and in his forehead. And I was about to like energize. I was like, oh, I'm going to be the one who's got to like calm this room down. And he looked at the director and he just said, okay.
Yeah.
And the director went, whoa, director was expecting a fight.
Yeah.
He was sweating. You could see him. He was nervous. And he goes, okay. And Arliss goes, yeah, I got you. Okay, great. Roll the cameras. Take again. Boom. They do another take. Arliss does the exact same thing. The director yells, cut, goes, great. That was beautiful. I'm so glad you did that. Thank you. Thank you. Moving on. And Arliss turns and looks at me and winks.
The timing of the bell was perfect because it hit your wink.
Sorry, man. It's a new computer. I don't know.
No, you're good. No, that was beautiful.
You know,
it was one of those bizarre moments where it's like, it literally sounded like a sound effect.
Good. That's what I heard when he winked. Yeah.
Well, you've worked a couple of times with a friend of mine. You worked with Joe Carnahan on The Gray and on Stretch. Are you guys close?
Yeah, we just texted a few weeks ago. I love Joe. I love Joe.
Yeah. What was working with him a couple times like?
Man, he's just fun.
Yeah. You know?
Joe's one of those guys, man. He's, I mean, we would joke around about it. We're like, he's like Ernest Hemingway. He's a true artist. I mean, he's a guy's guy, but he also has this incredible gift and empathy for human beings. And he comes from a really beautiful place with his writing. You know, The Gray was a really special movie, I think, for all of us, you know, and, that was a really special experience. And then, you know, Stretch was more in the comedic vein.
Yeah. Stretch is crazy.
Yeah.
Not enough people have seen Stretch because it kind of got shit canned.
Oh,
you know, it got dumped.
It's the funny thing about Joe, and this is what I love about Joe. Joe will fight to the death.
Yeah.
This was his movie, and he said, you know, a big F you to everybody, and was like, I'm going to do it my way. And I stand by that. You know, I love him to death for that.
The Gray is probably one of my top 100 in my top 100 films of all time. And I saw here again, I like to tell this story because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
How I decided to watch the film for the first time was on an airplane.
Are you kidding me? No,
I'm not kidding you.
Good move.
And I didn't think about it until like halfway through, or when the plate, you know, I knew it happened, but it wasn't in my head.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there watching it on like a tablet, and I'm just wondering, am I freaking somebody else out next to me?
Right?
But yeah, it did. It's weird. Now I'll flip out when I leave the house thinking I forgot to leave the dog back in. But for some reason, I don't have a problem watching something about a plane crash on a plane.
But when you're in an aluminum tube 35,000 feet above the ground.
Yeah. But it's such an amazing movie. And you guys, cool. I mean, such a great cast too in that. So many cool people.
It's a really special group of people. I mean, Liam, Frank, Dallas Roberts, who was a hero of mine coming up in New York. I mean, he was doing every play imaginable. I mean, he did a two-hander of Sam Shepard when I was in my early 20s, man, and Dermot Mulroney, man, it was just like a special crew of people. And, you know, we showed up to shoot the plane crash first. That's the first thing we did. And we did that in a studio in Vancouver for a week. They took apart a plane, reassembled it in the studio, and it was on gimbals so they could move the entire plane.
Yeah.
And then we had pieces of the plane that we could spin. And I mean, it was just this kind of playground. And then they chartered a flight to fly us all up to Smithers, British Columbia, where we were going to shoot all the mountain stuff with the snow. And it wasn't lost on us. We started to show up to the airport. We got the whole crew and we're getting on this airplane, which, by the way, we get in this airplane and it's like in worse shape than the fake airplane we had on the studio. The entire crew is on this. We're like, we're all like, oh, we know how this story, this is bad luck. We're testing the film gods right now. And they told us it was BYOB. And so you have never seen so much bottles, like bottles of whiskey and tequila up and down the aisle, because you just pass it, you know, because the crew was like, go for it, man. So we were just, everyone's dying. They're so nervous. We're just drinking the whole time. And we land in Smithers, British Columbia, in this small, it's a town of about 5,000 people. And, you know, the airport's just a landing strip. So you just walk off the stairs, get off the plane. It's negative 30 out.
Oh, fun.
Negative 30. The entire crew is shit-faced.
Yeah.
And we stayed up there for a while. We shot up there for a while. You know,
I can't imagine working in that kind of weather. I mean, man, you guys did it. You guys were out there in the elements, and that's insane.
Yeah. It was, it's hard work. It's good work. But that's we go back to that conversation of like, what type of work do you want to be doing?
Right.
You know, you could be in Los Angeles in a soundstage in Valencia.
Yeah.
Or you could be in Smithers, British Columbia with Joe Carnahan screaming at you through a megaphone. it's a lot more fun.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Well, you know, speaking of that, you do have a filmography that kind of hits pretty high on physical, you know, work. I mean, you were in 13 Hours, Only the Brave, World War Z, Iron Man 3, The Lone Ranger. I mean, all these things are, you know, there's a lot of action involved. Are you able to just handle the physicality more? Is that your preferred kind of thing to go to? Or do you have a preferred like type of material to gravitate towards?
I kind of know it when I read it, you know? Yeah. You know it when you see it, if it speaks to you. But that being said, I do enjoy the physicality. I enjoy the action movies. I like doing stunt work. I have a great time. I have a great time using my body, and there's something thrilling about it. You know, and like I said before, when you're doing action films, you're working with a different set of people who are doing things at a certain level. You know, I mean, you talk about, you know, 13 Hours with Michael Bay. You know, he didn't want to CGI any of that. You know, that was all actionable. We blew up everything, you know. The rumors are true. Michael will blow up everything. And but in order to do that, you have to work with the best people. You have to work with the best stunt guys and the best pyrotechnic guys and the best armorers, by the way, because we're laying out a lot of lead in that, that movie, you know what I mean? And so you know, that's a certain type of work, you know, and I think that movie's really holds up, you know.
Yeah. And you're really it's cool. I mean, you're in some, like I said, you're in so all these different movies. I mean, I remember, you know, in TV shows, like I remember watching the Black Donnellys when it was on, you know.
Oh yeah.
And that was such a cool show, but it was ahead of its time, because that kind of show would be perfect in, you know, if it came out 5 years after it did, you know.
I know, we missed with that. We missed a moment. It should have been on
on 5-10 cable years later.
That was Bobby Maresco was the head writer on that, and he was a showrunner, and I remember the first day I showed up, and I mean I butchered what he had written, You know, I don't know what happens. Sometimes other things come out of my mouth, man. Yeah. And I remember the script supervisor goes, whoa, no. Comes up and Bobby goes, no. He gets to say whatever he wants. Badge, whatever you want. Just go for it. And that's the way I got to work on that show. And I had a great time. It's a, you know, network TV is hard, you know, because I don't think they even finished showing the first season.
It was a real bummer because it was such a good show, and it could have been so much better had you guys not had any limitations put on you. You know, like if you were on AMC or Netflix or HBO or something, it just would have just been a smash.
Yeah,
you know, but it just network TV still can't. They're still hamstrung by limitations. You know, they can't. It's come a long way since I was a kid, where you couldn't really say or do anything, but. You know, back in the 70s, when I was growing up, like as a kid, sitcoms, they would sit there and they'd make up funny words to mean something else.
Right.
You know, because they couldn't say anything. You know, Red Fox didn't want to not curse on Sanford.
I know, right? And even that, I don't even think they go into that territory again. You know what I mean? You look at some of those shows, they were risky, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'll probably be doing a network show next week. I don't know.
Oh, hey, you got to work, man.
I got to work, and I got a kid in that room, so I'm trying to pay the mortgage.
So I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I'm really enjoying talking to you. But
yeah,
what do you have coming up next that might be coming out in the near future?
We got the third season of Hightown coming out.
Okay.
Also did this really cool project with this Canadian director named Nicole Dorsey, and her DP is Marie Davion. It's called Balestra. It's with Cush Jumbo, and I don't want to say too much, but I'm a big fan of this director, and it's a really cool project.
Yeah. How do you go about choosing roles these days? I mean, you know, are you just the material itself, or how does that work? Or do you pursue things strongly?
Shortest amount of time, most amount of money. Kidding. I wish that was true. I'm kidding. I want to work with good people. You know, I've said that before. To me, it's a director thing. You know, going back to Nicole Dorsey, you know, I read the project and I was kind of like, I don't know if this is the right thing for me at this point in time. And then I saw the movie she did, Black Conflux. Okay. And we had just had a kid. I mean, my son was about a month old when I left to go do her movie. And my girl and I, we sat down to watch Black Conflux, and 10 minutes in, my girlfriend stopped it and she looked at me and she said, "You have to go work with this director.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
We'll do whatever we can to facilitate that." And, you know, I try to pick projects based upon that. That's the best case scenario. But, you know, sometimes you do things for other reasons, man. But it's you know it when you see it. And if you have a little voice inside you saying that you have to go do this, or you're passionate about it, or the other one is like, I'm scared. You know, if I read a piece of material and I go, "Oh wow, this is scary. I don't know if I can go there."
Yeah.
Suddenly that becomes worth it. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. I thought the first second I thought you were frozen.
No, still here.
You were really holding there for a second. All right, let's do a couple of fun things here, or simple fun things. Favorite movie?
Oh man, favorite movie?
The one that you know you'll go to time and time and again.
The two movies I've watched the most in my life have been Mean Streets, and then Slapshot, the hockey movie.
All new. Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Favorite thing you acted in? What's your favorite role or film that you made? Or a TV show, whatever.
Ooh.
Well, even if it has nothing to do with your performance, what's the one that out of everything you've done, you were like, that one that one impressed me the most. It doesn't mean anything negative about anything else. It just means that you were like, that's the one.
I will say, you know, and it was just because I was talking about one of the other actors the other day, the film we did called Only the Brave, okay. which is about the Yarnell Hill fire and the Granite Mountain Hotshots. And it was a true story. And it was not only was it an incredible experience filming it, and we became very close and we felt like we were doing it for the right reasons. The family members became very close with us while we were filming it. And it was, we were kind of a part of the grieving process, you know, and that one meant a lot to me. Yeah. That was a deep one. That was a deep one. You know, I'm lucky. I a lot of these jobs, I've really special memories, you know, and man, get out of here.
You're good.
So, you know, I look back fondly, and the most amazing thing is a lot of these things, they filmed it, and I watch these films and it's like, I'm seeing this slice of this experience, you know, and you
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just couldn't tell. I thought you were done and I apologize. Who else was in that with you? It was why am I blanking? I know the cast, but who else was in that with you?
Josh Brolin, Miles right. Teller, Taylor Kitsch, Jennifer Connelly, Jeff Bridges, Scott right. Hayes, Jeff Stoltz. We just had this amazing yeah. group of people, and Joseph Kaczynski directed it, and you know. It's a really good movie. It stands up.
Yeah, it was a success too. It was like, I remember it came out in October. I gotta admit, I haven't seen it, but I got out this massive list of movies I haven't seen that I need to see it.
Oh man, put that up there. Yeah, it's we kind of got swallowed up. I don't think a lot of people saw it. You know,
It seemed like it did pretty well, considering. I forget when that came. I think it came out around the time that. I think it was the same year Joker came out, so that was kind of like taking up all the oxygen in the room, I believe.
Was it? I think it was a year.
Was it? I can't remember that. Everything before the pandemic is almost a blur now.
Yeah. Oh man, Joker, that was a good movie.
Yeah. Let's see here. All right, favorite food item, like, you know, tacos, pizza, whatever the fuck.
It's
what's your go-to, like your,
hey man, tacos, man.
Yeah,
tacos.
Yeah,
well, tacos, man.
Can you get better tacos in New York than you can in Los Angeles?
No, I'd say California without a doubt has better Mexican food.
Kind of makes sense.
It does make sense. We get, you know, New York's a good food town. You know,
sure.
We got a lot of people here from all over the world making really cool stuff.
It ain't like nothing's happening in New York.
It ain't like nothing's happening in New York, but you got to give credit where credit's due. You know, I do have to say I like to cook a little bit, and we were joking around about this. We almost named our son Bucatini, man, because we make so much pasta around this household, you know?
Bucatini Dale.
Yeah, hey, little Bucatini, come here.
What was your favorite place to shoot, you know, like in the world? Where, what location did you go to that you enjoyed being like off camera for?
Oh, okay.
Like hanging out, you know.
I mean, I've been all over, man. Australia was amazing. Budapest was amazing. I've shot in London. I've shot in Africa. The moment that I think I always have in my head, I was doing the movie The Empty Man, and we were shooting in Cape Town, South Africa. And I had convinced production to rent me a little pickup truck. I didn't live in the normal compound where they kept all the actors. So I was like off campus. And I made a deal with the producer. And he's like, I know you're going to go surfing. Just don't surf the False Bay side, surf the Atlantic side. Yeah. So I'd been out surfing the Atlantic side, and I was driving up on this little pickup truck on this mountain road. And I mean, the sun was setting. It was just, it was so beautiful. And I was just had this like moment where I thought, doesn't get any better than this. You know, doesn't get any better than this. Shooting a movie, surfing South Africa. And then I was filled with dread because I was like, man, it's all downhill from here. You know,
well, how does a New York guy get into surfing? Not that there isn't water in New York. I'm just saying that, is it from your time in California, or was that something you adopted earlier on?
I don't want to blow up anyone's spot here. I'll just say, like, New York, the New York, New Jersey, Long Island area, we got some sneaky good surf over here, you know? Okay. But you got to like cold water. So
yeah,
bring a 5'4" wetsuit. And
so you got it. You got into surfing on the East Coast.
I did. I went to high school in Los Angeles. I was a little skate rat. My best friend surfed in LA. I would go surfing with him, and I would get beat up a lot. I would get in fights in the water. I mean, I was terrible. Surfing is very difficult, and California's a very local territorial place. And I was 15 years old, and I was getting punched in the face in the water. And I was like, man, why am I doing this? If I get punched in the face when I'm skateboarding, at least I got a 50-50 shot, and then I can run if I need to be, you know?
You got a board to hit back with.
Yeah.
Not so exactly easy to swing a surfboard around.
Some of these guys do it, man. They can shoot them into your face. It's a whole thing. So I started, my best friend passed away when he was 29. So and we put his ashes out on his favorite spot in California. And then me and my other buddy, we went surfing, and it was the first time I'd surfed alone. And then I just came back home to the East Coast, and I got a thick wetsuit and a used board. And then I just started paddling out and conditions I shouldn't have been paddling out in, and I learned the hard way. And a lot of guys had to teach me what not to do. I'll put it that way.
That's cool. Yeah. So it almost sounds like your California time trying to surf sounds like Keanu Reeves in Point Break a little bit.
With
the guys from the Chili Peppers beating him up.
Oh yeah, that was a lot of years of my life, actually. Yeah. In different ways, man. Yeah.
What's something you do? I mean, you surf obviously, but what's something you do in your spare time that's something that people might be surprised about? I mean, do you have any other hobbies?
Well, I you know, I'm lucky that what I do for a living is my hobby. You know, I love acting. I love filmmaking. I love the theater. I do feel like that's my hobby. And when I'm not doing it, I'm working on it. You know, when I'm not doing it, I'm trying to develop things to, you know, your body is an instrument. Your mind is an instrument. Your soul, you know, I think a writer writes, an actor has to act, and you got to keep creating. You know, I wish I had a bunch of like cool hobbies. I don't know, man. I surf, I run, I box, I got dogs. I draw, I read, I write, and then I'm trying to raise a child and not let him hurt himself, you know. So
yeah. Well, I hear you.
It's funny, as you get older, I feel like your focus narrows a bit. Yeah. I mean that in a good way, you know. If you have all these things you're doing, and now time is more important, I'm sifting through this and I'm sifting through that, and I'm finding the things that are truly important to me. Oh, that kid just woke up.
Little Bucatini.
Yeah, little Bucatini waking up from a 2-hour nap, man.
Oh, it's a good kid.
Yeah. But you know, I live a healthy life, and I live an active life, and I think. I'll just say this. It was said to me a long time ago that, you know, if you want to be an artist, you want to be an actor, you want to be a writer, you have a responsibility to live a full life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the danger of what we were talking about earlier of Hollywood
is that you get a lot of people sitting there, they're not living a real life. You know, Hollywood is its own thing, and you got to get out of it. You got to get out of there and be a part of some stories in your own life so you can go back and tell stories.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think that's a good way to end. Badge, thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, man, thank you.
Feel free to reach out whenever you ever want to be on again. Just, you know, find a way to let me know.
No, man, I know your podcast. It was so funny because my manager was like, hey, have you heard of this thing, Rock and Roll Ghost? And I was like, yes, let's do it. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. Great. Awesome. I can't believe it. But yes, when I talked with them like a year or so ago, and they were like, yeah, but he's interested, but he doesn't have anything to promote at the time. And it's like, they kind of wanted to make sure to, you know, have something be at the same time. And I'm like, and then I didn't realize you were going to be in 1923 until I started watching. I'm like, wait a minute, that guy looks familiar. Because you have the beard and you don't look like yourself normally.
Hey, man, tell me the beard wasn't a mistake. I don't know.
No, it was good.
Like, I had the beard, and then I was like, halfway through filming, I was like, I don't know if I should have had this beard.
It disguised you, actually. It made you look different. You know, you kind of like fell into the role instead of being, well, this is James Badge Dale. You know what I mean?
I think that, thank you. And I think that was the idea, you know, and I kind of wanted to disappear.
Yeah. Well, you definitely did that because it took me until the second episode to realize it was you.
It took me till the end of the third to realize it was me.
Well, Badge, I really appreciate you taking the time again. Again, open invitation, whatever you need.
Thank you.
Feel free to reach out. You have a great rest of your day. Good luck with parenting. And taking care of little Bucatini the rest of the day.
Yeah. Little Bucatini over there, man. I got him his first bike yesterday, one of those like push bikes.
Yeah.
I can't wait to put him back on it and see what kind of destruction he can get in. Man, he's full on.
Oh, trust me. Eventually he's gonna figure out how to ride that thing, and he's gonna cause purposeful destruction.
I can't wait.
All right, man. You take care.
All right, man. Peace, man.
Later.
All right. Bye.